is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hi, this is Coach Steve Moore, and you're listening to the Hoopheads Podcast.
Hey, Hoopheads. Wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market, and they truly accelerate skill development faster than ever. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Also, make sure to check out the new Dr. Dish Home Machine, which is perfect for these crazy times when gyms and schools are closed. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel. Once again, Jay, we are tipping off on Tuesday night, 11:52, getting it in before midnight.
Yeah, I wish these games started at 8:30. I'm just going to say that right now, Mike. I wish they started at 8:30.
Yeah, I think 8:30 would probably be better. I understand that West Coast time, if you're in Los Angeles, 8:30 is a 5:30 tip. And if you're trying to get home from work, if you're even going to work at this point, maybe that's why they're keeping the games at 9 o'clock. So I guess I get it. But yeah, it's a little bit late here on the East Coast. Although for us, even though I know that we did a lot of our recent NBA podcasting during the pandemic here where we weren't having to get up the next day and go to work, we're kind of used to it at this point. So we're powering through.
Yeah, but you know, the Eastern Conference games are at 8:30, so we've got that going for us, right?
I guess.
All right. So tonight's game, I guess overall for the series, my prediction was there was going to be 2-1 Lakers at this point. If you would have told me that it was 2-1, I would have been happy with it, even though they lost the game tonight. You know, my thing is this. We're in the Western Conference Finals. I didn't really expect. I know I was joking with you after game two, or I guess halfway through game two, when the Lakers were up by like 15 or something, that it was going to be a sweep. And obviously, I was being kind of a little facetious there. I think you knew that. But I'm still sticking with the fact that, you know, game one, there was lots of foul calls, and the Lakers, I think, shot 37 free throws. Game two, the Lakers could have easily lost that game if it wasn't for Anthony Davis. There was a lot of bad play in that game by the Lakers, and they managed to pull it out because they were up by 15 and they should have never blown the lead. And then tonight, I give it to the Nuggets. They played really well. And we've talked a lot about how the Lakers were really relying on two people, and you could see that in the late third, early fourth quarter when LeBron and Anthony Davis led the Lakers charge, where the Nuggets kept throwing the ball away and LeBron just did everything, which, by the way, another triple-double for LeBron. I think it was 26th. That was his 26th career playoff triple-double, Mike. Was that what that said?
I think that was the stat that they flashed up,
so,
yeah.
So it was his second, you know, he's second all time. But the problem they have is they just couldn't make a shot tonight. I mean, Danny Green, like, from last year's finals to this, it's like, I don't know, it's like he's a completely different person. It's like the Monstars came and took his powers or something, Mike. Like, and not that saying that Danny Green was that good of a player anyways, but he can't shoot anything anymore. I mean, last year, if you would have given him two straight jumpers in the corner for three, he would have never missed both of them. Tonight, he did it multiple times where he just couldn't hit a shot. Caruso played terrible. And that's the bottom line. And Jokic and Murray played well. And the sleeper of the night, Jeremy Grant, played a really, really good game. 10 of 12 from the free throw line, made some really big plays throughout the game. And, you know, give it to the Nuggets. Hats off to them.
All right, let's start with the Lakers. I think the problem with the Lakers is they really just have two reliable players. And everybody else, you just have no idea what you're getting.
Wait, Mike. They have three reliable players. Dwight Howard's reliable to be a little punk walking up and down the floor, right?
He's definitely become an annoyance more than he is a basketball player. And just, I can't stand watching him walking around and he's just banging Jokic up and down the floor, which is fine. But then his antics and facial expressions and throwing his arms up in the air and all these different things. And he's actually, honestly, he's contributed a little bit. He didn't do anything really tonight that was of much value, but in games one and two, I thought he was actually pretty impactful in what he did. And for a while there, it looked like he was going to get under Jokic's skin until the end of game two, when Jokic just basically destroyed the Lakers. So that was, I think, not that surprising based on what we've seen from Jokic over the course of the last 2 years worth of playoffs. The guy's just proven himself time and time again to be a clutch player. But LA just doesn't have – where do they get offense? If Davis and James aren't giving them offense, I just don't know who night to night they can count on. And we said before we jumped on here, I told you I thought that it's crazy, but Rondo's probably their third best, most important player at this point. And there's a lot of people who going into the year laughed at Rondo signing, and even over the course of the season, Rondo's, I think, advanced metrics and stats don't show him to be a real plus at this point in his career. And so if he's their third best guy, it's going to make it awfully tough. And I think we saw that tonight when, after the Lakers got done with their, whatever it was, 18-2 run, and they had it down to three, and you could just see that LeBron and AD were completely exhausted. Like, there was the one point where, I can't remember if it was Reggie Miller or Weber, just made the comment that AD was walking up the floor and all four other Lakers were down the floor and here comes AD, and he was just, you could just see it, they were exhausted. And when you're being asked to do everything on offense against a good team, that gets real tough real fast when you're in these kinds of games that go up and down the floor and that there's a lot of pressure moments. And especially when you're trying to come back, you exert all that energy to try to get back in the game, and then they just didn't have enough to get over the hump. And so, as well as Anthony Davis played the other day, and he was good offensively tonight, he didn't make a three, but, and he didn't really rebound the ball. I thought in the second half especially, there was multiple times where Jokic just boxed him out and Davis, I don't want to say quit, but he just didn't fight very hard to try to get around Jokic to get the rebound. And I don't know. I still think, I mean, I know we went into it and you said Lakers in five and I said Nuggets in seven. So both of our predictions prior to this series are still alive. In all honesty, I feel pretty good about where the Nuggets are, thinking about game two and that game. I know there's obviously a lot of plays in the 47 minutes and 58 seconds prior to Anthony Davis's shot, but if that shot doesn't go in, or Denver plays a little bit better defense in that, at that point, you know, it's a 2-1 series for Denver, and people are saying, what's wrong with the Lakers? So, you know, you can look at it a whole bunch of different ways, but if I'm Denver, I think I feel pretty good. If I'm the Lakers, I feel pretty good too. I think both teams probably have reason to believe that they can continue on and win the series. So we'll see what happens.
I can see where you're saying about the Nuggets and where they are. You know, who knows? I think it'll be interesting the next two games and see the adjustments that are made, although I don't know how many adjustments the Lakers can make. I mean, did J.R. Smith maybe come in the game and hit some threes? Maybe. I mean, he isn't.
We got to get Deion suited up. How come Deion's not suited up?
Dude, Deion was just sitting there with his shirt on more than a vote. He didn't even look engaged in the game at all.
Like, he's not even dressed, right?
I thought he was dressed tonight. But
was he?
Maybe,
I don't know. The other game, he didn't even have a uniform on. It looked like he was in street clothes to me.
Well, listen, maybe he was taking some gummies and they didn't want to put him on the floor, Mike.
Here's the thing, and I think
J.R. Smith was suited up tonight, but Deion was not. So okay. You're right.
There you go. Yeah, I don't think Deion's been active any game in this series, and I don't even remember if he was active at all in previous series against Houston.
No, he played some because they put him in the game, and I remember Chris Webber saying, oh man, Deion Waiters, instant offense off the bench, and Deion proceeded to clank three straight shots. So
let's put it this way. If Deion Waiters really was instant offense off the bench, I'm pretty sure the Lakers could find a spot for him at this point, because they really don't have much in the way of anything coming off their bench or starting other than Davis and LeBron. And here's the thing, like, I was just looking at and thinking about these two rosters and thinking about this series going forward. And obviously, if you're the Lakers, you feel very, very confident that you're going to get great games out of LeBron and Anthony Davis, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think at this point, you'd be foolish to think anything other than that when it comes to Jokic and Murray, right? I mean, Murray and Jokic are both going to have, at worst, their playoff averages, correct?
Correct.
I mean, I don't expect either one of those guys to have a bad game for the remainder of the series. So now you're looking at, yeah, Davis and LeBron's ceiling is probably higher than Murray and Jokic's, although, I mean, game to game, who knows? Both of those guys on the Nuggets are just terrific. But then you look at the next round of players and you're like, who on the Lakers potentially could have a big scoring game besides their two best players? Kuzma maybe, but he doesn't get enough minutes. And he was scared on that 1-3 that he passed up and then he shot it. I don't know if you remember the play.
Oh yeah, he totally,
I mean, he was wide open.
Whiffed on that one.
He was totally wide open, and then just you could see he was thinking, "Ooh, I don't know if I should shoot this one at this point in the game." And then eventually he had to shoot it because they just kind of left him there and then closed out on him late. But anyway, I think if you're the Lakers, who has the potential on the Lakers to give you 20 points other than AD and LeBron?
I think the only options probably. I mean, if Caldwell Pope actually makes shots, he could. But, I mean, he had a good game tonight, and he only had 12. So
right,
I guess
that's
20,
what I'm saying.
Yeah,
I'm saying.
I think it has to be Kuzma and Rondo. Those are the only two people that could probably.
Rondo's not going to get you 20 points at this point in his career. He's never going to take enough shots to get you 20 points. So I guess my point. I just don't think they have anybody else who's going to give them 20 points. Kuzma maybe. But I don't think anybody else. And now you look down at, you look at Denver. Could Millsap still give you 20? Probably not likely, but
not
maybe.
Not if he goes to the lane like he did on LeBron tonight, and LeBron literally just snatched the ball out of his
hands. He's looking a little chunky.
Millsap's always looked a little chunky to me.
I don't know, man. He just looks heavy to me, and maybe that's just, again, he's getting
older.
Maybe
it's that Disney World food, man.
Maybe I don't know. But okay, so Millsap is an outside chance of giving you 20. Grant gave you 26 tonight, so he's clearly capable, and he's going to get open shots based on their offense.
He's not hitting 20 points the rest of the series.
He may not, but I'm saying he could, right? He proved it tonight. Gary Harris probably not going to give you 20. Plumlee not going to give you 20. Porter Jr., he could.
He's not looked good this series.
You know, he's been, you know what's funny about him is that he's a weird player. He's a weird player because he doesn't do a lot of the things that you would think a guy with his talent can do. Like, he's not a good passer at all. Like, honestly, like when I watch him pass, it's almost like he doesn't know how to pass. Like, he had one play, I think it was in the fourth quarter, maybe with like 4 minutes to go, and either he got an outlet or got a rebound. He was coming up the right side and he was trying to throw it ahead. And it was just like the way he released the ball and what he was doing, it was crazy. He didn't look comfortable, but he could shoot it. He could certainly get you 20. Torrey Craig's probably not getting you 20. Monte Morris, he gave you 14 tonight, played really, really well. It was interesting we didn't see Dozier tonight after as many minutes as he played in game two.
Especially after he played so well in game two. Like, especially
down
the stretch, right?
Yeah, so I don't know. I guess I trust the Nuggets back end of their roster and their other guys more than I trust the other Lakers guys, which means that you got to say that LeBron and AD are going to outplay Murray and Jokic by a pretty decent amount for the Lakers to be able to really control and win games. And I'm not sure at this point that, I mean, they may outplay them, but like I said, I think Murray and Jokic have proven, especially this season with Murray, that, I mean, my God, those guys have been incredible.
So are you sticking with your Nuggets in seven prediction?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I think, again, that AD shot doesn't go in and the Nuggets are up 2-1.
Okay, Mike. All right.
No, you're still not buying it?
No, I'm not buying it at all.
All right, make the case. What's the case for the Lakers? I'm laying out
There's only one word I have to say.
What's that?
LeBron. That's all I'm going to have to say. And I'm going to tell you right now, he's going to be pissed off about something that was said tonight during the broadcast.
Well, he was already mad about not getting the MVP, right?
Right. He's going to get pissed off about something that was said during the broadcast tonight.
All right, what's he going
to
get mad about?
Chris Webber said that Anthony Davis was the best player on the floor tonight for the Lakers. When you're the best player on your team, that's what Chris Webber said tonight. I'm telling you right now, someone's going to tell LeBron that Chris Webber said Anthony Davis.
LeBron can't get publicly mad about that.
Well, no, he's not going to get publicly mad about that. But I'm telling you right now, LeBron's going to score 35 plus in the game four the next day. I'm telling you right now, he's going to score 35 plus and maybe have a triple double.
All right, I think honestly, here's where I'm at right now with LeBron. I really do think that this series, and if the Lakers do get past the Nuggets and go to the finals, I really do think that this series is going to be a referendum on where he is, not for his career, but in this moment, I'm not convinced that he can carry a team for 46 minutes like he did some of those Cavs teams and carry a supporting cast that's not as good past a really good team. And he's going to have to do it.
Like, if you took the Cavs from 2018 and you took the Lakers from this year and you took LeBron off the roster, which team wins?
I mean, you'd have to say the Lakers, because you would hope that Davis steps up and he's clearly better than anybody on that 2018 Cavs roster, right? I mean, I'm not sure. Again,
let's do this then. Let's take LeBron and Davis off of the Lakers. Let's take LeBron and Love off the 2018 Cavs. Now, who do you take? Keynote, J.R. Smith is on both rosters. But, like, who do you take in that situation? I probably take the 2018 Cavs, right?
Yeah, probably. I mean, that's a game that's destined for a Tuesday night on NBA TV.
that's Wizards Cavs from this past season.
That's a game I have no interest in watching whatsoever. I can honestly say that.
I think that the Lakers are going to do it. I don't think LeBron loses this. I'm a little more hesitant to say it in five, but I'm not going to change my prediction. You know,
I'm telling you, he was gassed in the fourth. AD was gassed in the fourth.
By the way,
I don't know, man.
I'm sorry. How the hell is AD so gassed? He is a guy who's never been in the play. I guess maybe that's. I mean, the argument would be, he's a guy who's never played in the playoffs this deep into the playoffs, and this. I mean, to be fair, this is a different kind of playoff schedule. Would you agree with that statement? I mean, they're playing every other day. And I know they just had, and I made the argument they should have 8 days off. You'd think they had 8 days off. How is he gassed? Like, I get how 36-year-old LeBron's gassed. He's played the most playoff minutes in NBA history, and he's still going out there playing 40 minutes. Okay? How is he tired?
Played 43 minutes, man. What's his season high in minutes? He probably never has played 43 minutes.
It doesn't matter. He's like, how old is Anthony Davis?
27?
Come on, man.
All right, well, think about this. So, this is a pretty big game, right?
Yeah.
Pretty big game. So, think about during the Cavs runs, the minutes that LeBron played. How many minutes did he play typically in the, let's say, the Eastern Conference Finals, huge games, and during finals games?
Well,
46 minutes, 45 minutes.
Well, is it the year that they blew out Toronto in three?
Let's put it this way. In years where, or in series where the game was, and the game and the series were in jeopardy or were in doubt, how many minutes would LeBron typically play? 44, 45, 46 minutes. He'd take one rest in the first half and then play the remainder of the second half, right?
Yeah.
So tonight he plays 37 minutes in a game that, pretty important game. Game that I guess you could say maybe Denver was controlling it, so they figured, well, it's kind of a lost cause. But for LeBron to only play 37 minutes, I don't know, man. He played more minutes
than Giannis played.
But let's say this. If LeBron wants to play 46 minutes, do you think he's not playing 46 minutes? Do you think Frank Vogel has that much control over the roster?
I don't think they looked at this game as an important game, like you were saying. Like, I really don't think they looked at this game as an important game.
Yeah, but look, man, the history of what the Nuggets have done in the last two series, and as good as Jokic and Murray have been, do you really want to give that team life? If you win that game tonight and you go up 3-0, I mean, the series is effectively over. So do you really want to breathe life into a young team that's already feels like, hey, we can come back from anything? We came back 3-1 on a team that was favored to win the title. We came back from 16 or 18 down in three straight games against a team that everybody thought was better than us. Now we're just down 2-0. The second game we lost is one we felt like, by all rights, we should have won, if not for a last-second shot and a defensive blown assignment. I don't know that you want to give that team confidence. I won't be surprised if the Lakers end up winning the series because LeBron and Anthony Davis are that good. But I'm not convinced that it's going to be easy. And I think other than game one, where I think there was a little bit of hangover effect from Denver coming off the emotional 7-game series win over the Clippers, and they already had another 7-game series under their belt, so it's kind of understandable how they came out a little bit flat in game one. But games two and three, man, they have gone toe-to-toe with the Lakers. And I haven't seen anything in those two games that would indicate to me that the Lakers are suddenly going to take complete control of the series and just blow them out in the next two games. I mean, I think Denver's going to be right there with them. They're going to have to earn it. And Murray and Jokic are as clutch as you want to say LeBron and AD are, and as great as those two guys are, I have just as much confidence in the last minute in Jokic and Murray to come through as I do LeBron and Davis.
Mike, I don't know what's going on with you with this nonsense.
What are you talking about? What did Murray do tonight? He hit those two threes in the last 2 minutes. The one was a bomb from like 35 feet. He's done it the whole playoffs. Jokic scored the last 11 points for his team the other night.
You have the same amount of level of confidence in those two that you absolutely do with his LeBron.
What have I been on record saying about LeBron in the last 2 minutes of a game? It's not like I haven't been on the record with this. What am I on the record saying?
You said he's not clutch. I know. Listen,
Hey, what happened in the play that got drawn up for Anthony Davis? That play was supposed to be for LeBron, right?
There was no way that play was for LeBron. I know
that's
Anthony
what I'm
Davis
saying.
Said that.
That's what I'm saying. There's no way that play was for LeBron.
When Anthony Davis said that, by the way, I rolled my eyes.
Well, because what did LeBron do on that play?
He stood there like they
he
were going to throw
nothing.
Him that. I guarantee you LeBron was the safety valve, and what they were going to do was they were going to lob it over the top if they couldn't get it to AD, and he was going to take a stupid turnaround jumper from the elbow.
Absolutely. Right, I agree. So the play is not
LeBron
designed
being
for LeBron.
LeBron being the decoy was the key there, though, because that's how the defense wasn't paying attention to Anthony Davis. And I don't know what the hell. Who was it, Jokic, who was supposed to be up on AD?
Yeah, it was Plumlee.
Who was it? Who let him get that much space, Mike?
Plumlee just ran right into LeBron. I mean, there was no reason. He should have just stayed right on Anthony Davis's hip. He catches the ball. You contest it. And if Davis makes it with a hand in his face, great. But you can't just let the guy go. And I know
Why is Plumlee in the game in that situation either?
I think whatever Mike Malone thought he was bringing him in for defense and thought he was going to be a benefit. But, it really didn't turn out to be that way. And there probably was some miscommunication. I'm sure Plumlee was calling for a switch, but there just was no need to switch because there was no screen. LeBron literally just stood there. And we talked about it with Giannis. I'll talk about it with LeBron again. Davis made the shot. Obviously, Davis is a top five player in the league, so I'm not going to argue with the fact that the play is designed for Davis. But if you're LeBron, don't you want that shot?
I mean, yeah, but you also want to win.
I agree, but I'm just saying.
I think 5 years ago, LeBron takes the shot.
Right. So again, going back to my point, I have as much confidence in if that shot goes into Jokic or Murray, if it's the same situation on the other end of the floor, I have just as much confidence that Jokic and Murray would come through with 2 seconds to go on an inbounds play and score as I do Davis and LeBron. Now you can say,
man, we're
going to
get some negative reviews after this episode, Mike. They're used to your James Harden bashing, but they're not used to the LeBron bashing.
I'm not bashing the guy. I'm just saying that my one criticism of LeBron over the years has been that I don't think in clutch moments he's not the guy that I necessarily want the ball. So maybe it's a good decision by LeBron to let AD take it and score. Obviously, it was the right decision because he made the shot. But when it comes right down to it, I feel like Murray and Jokic are going to have a good game every game that's left in this series. And I think Davis and LeBron are going to have good games every game the rest of the series. I just think the other Nuggets are more likely to put up better numbers than the other Lakers. And that means that Davis and LeBron have to outplay Murray and Jokic by, I don't want to say a super significant amount, by a decent amount in order for the Lakers to win. And I think that's tough to do when you're the only two guys that can create offense. And that's the other thing too, is you look at what Denver has and you say, all right, yeah, Murray and Jokic create most everything, but like Grant can put the ball on the floor a little bit and go to the basket. Gary Harris can kind of do that a little bit. Monte Morris got to the rim and drove by people. For the Lakers, the only guy who's creating anything for anybody else is Rondo. Nobody else. Danny Green's not setting anybody up. Kuzma is kind of like Michael Porter Jr. He's mostly just out there to score. He's not looking to facilitate or do anything in that realm of it. Caruso, I wouldn't trust him to make the right play at the right moment. So I don't know. Look, I think it's going to be a good series. I don't think it's going to be over in five. I think it's going to go six or seven, no matter who wins it. And I expect every game to be competitive and come down to the end. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays itself out.
All right. We're going to agree to disagree. Let's right, move
maybe
over.
Maybe I'm crazy, but I'm telling you, man, every game I watch the Nuggets, I get more and more confident. I just like how they just keep
pandering
competing.
Pandering to Bew. I know what's going on here.
If you have an existing podcast or are looking to launch your own pod but aren't sure where to start, the team at My Podcast Manager can help. Our podcast team works behind the scenes so you can do what you do best. We'll help you launch your podcast, make it sound great, and free up your time for the more enjoyable parts of podcasting. If you're ready to put your podcast editing, production, and promotion on autopilot with a trusted team of podcasting professionals, visit mypodcastmanager.com to get started.
Let's talk about the other series. I'll be honest with you, Mike. I have zero interest in this series. I literally do not care about Boston, Miami. And what's sad, I watched game one and I really enjoyed it. I have watched maybe 10 minutes of game two and three. I just don't, what I was concerned about has happened, and I don't have any rooting interest in either of these two teams. I hate Boston. I don't really like Miami. I mean, I like Jimmy Butler. I like Bam.
Well, then who don't you like on Miami? You just don't like the idea of Miami?
I just don't know.
If you like Jimmy and you like Bam, I mean, those are the two most important guys.
I don't know if it's because of the whole LeBron going to Miami thing, and even though Miami really, I mean, they just booed him and whatever, but I like Spoelstra. I just don't really have any interest in either of these teams, I guess. Like I would much rather either of the Western Conference teams win it. I would much rather the Lakers win it. If the Nuggets pull off the upset and beat the Lakers, I'd much rather them win it than either of these two teams, because I can't stand Boston. I'll be honest with you, Mike, I love Bill Simmons. I don't want to hear about Boston winning an NBA championship for the next 6 months. I don't want to hear it, because that's what, you know, exactly that's what's going to happen. Miami, you know, I guess I really wouldn't hear it from anyone else as much, but I don't really care for either of these teams to win it. I would much rather have the two Western Conference, and I think that series is way more intriguing. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it's because of LeBron that I find the Lakers and Nuggets more intriguing, but I just don't. I don't have the interest to watch those games. I don't know how you feel on the games and how much you've watched them, but that's just where I'm at, at least.
I much prefer the Western Conference series without question. I'm sort of like you. I have a long-bred distaste for anything Boston Celtics. So even though some of their players are okay that I like, I don't really care for Tatum. I don't really care for Marcus Smart, although, again, I think the guy plays hard, and he's a guy that you'd probably love if he was on your team, but I just don't really – I don't know. He doesn't do anything for me. Kind of like Jaylen Brown. Kemba I've talked about in terms of – I think he's a good player, but I think in the playoffs he can be marginalized. And then Miami, I think I do have a general distaste for Miami just as a result of LeBron leaving Cleveland and going to Miami. So I think there's some lingering effects from that. And there's nobody on Miami's team that I'm like, oh man, I really like that guy. Jimmy Butler, I don't really like him. Bam, I like the way Bam plays. I like Hero. But I don't know. I'm not as intrigued by that series, certainly, as I am by the Lakers and the Nuggets. Now, it's been a good series, been a competitive series, and I think Boston winning game three, it's interesting how the narrative flipped, where it seemed like after the first two games that it was almost like people were banking on Hayward coming back, and if Hayward didn't come back, I think it seemed like the consensus was almost like, man, Miami's going to run them right out of town and sweep them. But now when Boston wins game three, and you hear a lot of people talking about, well, Boston's now right back in it and they got a great chance to win. It'll be interesting to see what the narrative is with Denver and the Lakers, because clearly the Lakers have been a pretty heavy favorite over the Nuggets. So it'll be interesting to see how the talk about the Western Conference series at 2-1, how that compares with the Eastern Conference series at 2-1. And I'm with you on the fact that that series, to me, I'm not as interested in it. And I guess it points to, like I said, me not really having an affinity for Boston. And then Miami's just not a team that, I don't know, I'm kind of ambivalent towards them. I don't really care. I guess if I have to root for one team or the other to get to the finals, I guess I'm rooting for Miami. I think Miami-LA would be interesting with LeBron matching up against Spoelstra and his former team and Pat Riley and whatever lingering animosity there might be between LeBron and Riley. But I'm not, again, I'd much rather, I enjoy the Lakers-Nuggets games a lot more than I've enjoyed the Heat-Celtics games, let's put it that way.
I'll probably tune in a little bit over the next few games, but I know that I'm going to tune in to the Nuggets-Lakers on Thursday night. I know that I'm going to turn into the Nuggets-Lakers on Saturday night. That, to me, is almost appointment viewing. If I miss the game tomorrow or Friday, I'm going to be like, I'll just look at the box score. And
all right, well, where do you stand on this series with Boston and Miami? Let's just
kinda, I mean, I think Miami's going to win it. I think Miami's going to win it. I don't think the Boston's going to win it. I think the Hayward coming back, the lift of that was one game situation. I think the Heat have the culture, the, you might say, the 305 culture.
There you go.
Plug.
Shout out to JJ.
I feel like they have the culture to win the series. They've got a lot of people who've proven that they can be clutch in moments. You know, I guess not as
it's
big
an
a
interesting
moments as,
it's an interesting let's it's an interesting contrast with the Western Conference. So if you look at the two best players on Miami and the two best players on Boston, and we probably could argue about who those players even are, whereas clearly with the Nuggets and the Lakers, we know who those two best players are on each of those teams. So Miami, I guess you'd probably have to say Butler, and do you pick Bam or do you pick Dragic? Dragic is their leading scorer in the playoffs.
I would pick Bam because of his defense, and I would take Dragic third. I think the thing that's interesting about Miami is these teams really have. I would say that you could make an argument for who their best two players are out of three players. Like, I really think it's really more of a best three players argument. The same thing with the Boston, right? You'd say Tatum, Brown, and Kemba. I would probably take Tatum and Kemba over Brown, but Kemba can marginalize them on the defensive end. So I truly think that it's hard to pick two players. Like you said, with the other two series, it's clear, right? You would say it's clear that who the top two is over there. But for the Eastern Conference teams, I think it's really between three players, and you can make arguments going either way on those guys, right?
Yeah, for sure. And I think, and tell me if I'm crazy here, but I don't think anybody on Miami or Boston cracks the top four of the Western Conference.
Oh, no. You're saying, are any of them better than Jokic, Murray?
Who's number five? Who's number five? If you had to take one guy from
probably Butler,
and so you look at Butler and you say, okay, is Butler like what's he averaging in the course of the playoffs? Like he may not even be averaging 20 because he's not taking.
I'm thinking all around though.
No, I know, but I'm saying you think about the traditional model of how a team wins an NBA title, and you think about a team being built around a guy who's clearly a star, you know, at least one, and in recent years, two or three. And really, Miami has nobody who fits that bill. Because I think Butler is a different kind of best player. I think you're right when you say that is kind of his all-around game defensively and just as from an emotional standpoint and how hard he plays and all those things. But he's not your traditional, hey, go. Now, he's closed some games really, yeah, really well, which is one thing that he can do. But over the course of 48 minutes, Jimmy Butler is not going to go into the NBA Finals and average 26 a game in the Finals. He's just not. And I don't think anybody on the Heat probably is capable of doing that in a series. So they have to win it as a team. So in that way, they're not built like a traditional NBA champion. Maybe you think back to the Pistons that beat the Shaq Kobe Lakers and what the 2004 or whatever that was with, you know, the Rip Hamilton, Chauncey Billups, that group, where they kind of had a bunch of guys that were sort of even. I think Miami is kind of like that. And then you look at Boston's side, and I think the consensus probably is that Tatum is their best player. But as I've been saying all along, I still think Tatum is, he's still a little bit away from where he may end up getting in his career, but I don't think he's ready to lead a team as the best player to an NBA title. And that's weird to say because what's Murray? Murray's like 23. He's probably the same age as Tatum. Maybe he's a year older. But Murray's just been, again, he's been lights out and has proven that he can go crazy. I'm not sure Tatum has that same kind of game in him. So I don't know. Then, let's put it this
real
way.
Quick, Mike, to contrast the players, I think I would take either of the Eastern Conference coaches over either of the Western Conference coaches. What do you think about that, Mike?
Ooh, that's a tough one because
I mean, I would take of the four remaining coaches, I think Spoelstra would be my coach.
Right? Yeah, I agree. Okay, so let's rank them because it's, I mean, but I don't think it's, I mean, I don't think it's a landslide for, like, I don't think any of these guys are bad coaches. Like, I don't think you have a bad coach.
I think Spoelstra's the best though, 100%.
I agree. I would take Spoelstra number one.
I think I would go Spoelstra, Stevens, Vogel, and Malone. And here's why I would go there. I think Stevens.
Do you think he's a little overrated?
I think he's a little overrated, but when you, I think the thing is, I think a lot of the other coaches have taken what he's done, and he's kind of been the model for like. Timeout play, out of bounds, timeout plays, ATOs, things like that. I think he kind of revolutionized some of the plays that have been called. Because if you go back 6 years before he was in the NBA, the sophistication of these inbound plays, and I know a lot of that is just, you know, how the league has trended. But the way that he calls plays, I will say this, I don't think their offensive schemes are very good. But if you need a timeout and a play out of bounds, you're going to Brad Stevens for that.
Well, and I think the other thing with Stevens is he sort of represents the new age of coaching, kind of what we talk about on the podcast all the time in terms of building a culture and building relationships with your players and sort of that calm demeanor that he always exudes on the sidelines. And so, but I still don't know. I'm not convinced.
So here's my thing.
I don't disagree with your rating. I would take Spoelstra one. Then I think, see, I think Vogel is weirdly underrated because you look at what he did with the Pacers, and you think about his best player was Paul George, and based on the playoff history that we've seen in recent years with Paul George, if Paul George is your number one guy and you're getting to the Eastern Conference Finals with that, then you must have been doing something right. I think Vogel's weirdly underrated, and again, LeBron is clearly bought in, and it doesn't seem like, at least from what we know, that there was a prior relationship there, and a lot of people thought that Vogel was going to get canned 20 games into the year and get replaced by Jason Kidd. So he clearly was coaching this year under a lot of pressure. So I think Vogel maybe is underrated, where Stevens is maybe slightly overrated. So I would maybe put those guys as a tie. I know it's kind of a cop-out. And then Mike Malone probably third. And again, not because he's a bad coach, just because his track record is probably shorter than the rest of those guys in terms of sustained success. And if Mike Conley's jumper goes in game seven of round one, Denver's home and all this whole conversation kind of becomes moot. But there's four good coaches without question of these final four teams.
Yep. All right. Anything else on the Heat? Did you say what you think is going to happen, Mike?
I still think – I think I said Heat in six, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think I'm going to stay there. I think Miami – gets this next one to go up 3-1. And I think Boston gets game five, and then the Heat close them out in six. Although it's interesting, and we've talked about it a little bit before, but I think it's worth mentioning here again. The fact that there's no home and away situation just gives these series a completely different feel than what they would if the teams were traveling back and forth to their home arenas. So yep. Let's take the Western Conference. So tonight Denver would have come home. They win this game. They got one more home game to play. Then you go to a game five back in LA. That's not happening. In the Miami and Boston series, Boston would have been the higher seed, lost the first two games at home. Then they go back and would have gone to Miami and somehow steal that game. It's just they don't have to steal another one on the road. They're just playing on a neutral court. So I think there's not the natural ebb and flow that we're used to in these series. And I think that was what allowed for Denver's 2-3-1 seventh game comebacks, because they didn't have to go on the road and win any game. They just had to win one game on a neutral floor and then come back and do that again. And I think all these teams in the NBA are capable of winning games on the neutral floor if they play well. And yeah. So that, I think, sort of has a big impact on these series that maybe we're discounting. I think when we look back historically, after we have some perspective a year or two down the road, it'll be interesting to see how this, you know, how it's perceived when we didn't have, for the first and hopefully only time, where we don't have home games.
Yep. All right. I'm sticking with Heat and six.
Okay.
I might have said Heat and five, but I'm going to go Heat.
No, I think we agreed last time. I think we both had Heat and six, I believe. So all right. Yeah, we're sticking with that.
All right. Some other small news to talk about real quick before we wrap up, Mike. Billy Donovan, head coach of the Chicago Bulls. Not overly surprised that he got a head coaching gig. I'm a little surprised at destination, because, I mean, I don't think the Bulls are close, but maybe I'm wrong. But that's a good hire for the Bulls, I think. I mean, Billy Donovan proved it this year. And we'll just see what happens there. I don't really have anything else to say. I think Billy Donovan's a good coach, and we'll see if it's a good fit.
I think you summed it up well. I think it's a good hire for the Bulls. It's kind of interesting that Donovan chose to go to Chicago versus maybe somewhere else. Now, again, we don't know what opportunities he did or didn't have to go to a franchise that's maybe closer to being able to win. But you think about Billy Donovan's background as a college coach and working with young players. And I don't know if you can classify Zach LaVine as young anymore, since he's been in the league probably for 8-9 years, but he's probably only 25 or 26 maybe at this point. To me, he's the guy that you got to reach him somehow and get him to play some defense, which seems unlikely at this point. But the Bulls have a nice young core that kind of regressed last year. And, you know, you think about Markkanen, and 2 years ago people were kind of thinking that he was going to ascend maybe to all-star level. And then last year he started out the year hurt and then just kind of never got it back. And Wendell Carter had a really good rookie year, and then last year again kind of regressed and was hurt and never reached what people thought he was going to be in his second year. Kobe White came in and he had a decent rookie year, but kind of had a reputation as just being a gunner. And so they have some pieces there. Chris Dunn probably was – did he make the all-defensive team? I think he did.
But, sure.
But anyway, so there's some pieces there that Donovan can work with. And I don't know where the Bulls fell. I forget where they fell in the draft this year, but they're probably going to be able to add another good young player to that mix. So there's some potential there for that team to improve and get better. I still don't know that they have the star that you'd want to have to kind of anchor the franchise. I don't think LaVine is that guy at this point, but Donovan's a good coach. He's a good hire for the Bulls. And again, somewhat surprising that's where Donovan chose to go, but we just don't know what he has available or not available. So we'll see what happens.
Yep, we'll see what happens. All right, so the last thing we want to talk about tonight is the Silver's comments to CNN today that it's likely that they're going to – he's likely going to push the season back into the new year. I kind of saw this in the coming. I know you said you didn't think they would give up the Christmas golden goose, but I just don't think that the league's ready. I think they're getting through this, and – the miraculousness that they've had with this and just avoiding everything possible so far to really have anything that would ruin. I think that the league just needs to take a break. They want to make sure they do it right. I think it's smart to push it back. If they truly want to make it happen where there's going to be fans in the stadium, like they say, I think there's too much revenue being lost across the NBA, and owners are probably going to pressure him to do this. I think players are going to be tired and want to do this a little bit, especially some of the big names. Obviously, you know, the Cavs players, I know they've been having their little things around Cleveland right now, but nothing, you know, they're not getting a true grind on right now. But I think that this is the smart move for the league. They want to make it a full regular season. They want to make it a full playoff. I think we're going to see this, Mike, where it's going to. I think they realized that this is a great time for the NBA to be playing into October. And I would not be surprised if this is the way the seasons unfold, at least for next year, where we start in January and we, you know, maybe they start MLK Day. I think that would be a really poignant.
I think they're going to want to be done before football, though. I still don't think they want to go head-to-head if they can avoid it. They don't want to go head-to-head with the NFL.
So you don't think opening day, Martin Luther King Day, with everything that's going on, wouldn't be where their heads are going to be at?
I mean, maybe, but you're still going to try to wrap things up by August 31st then. I could see the value in playing through the summer, but I don't see the value to the NBA of playing during this time of the year going up against football. I just don't think... If you're talking about it long term, if you talk about it 1 year, this year, it's fine. But I don't think the NBA wants to make it a habit of going up against NFL football. So if they could start the season and get it timed out where they could finish on August 31st, right before regular season football kicks in, I think to me that makes sense. They could own the summer. Baseball, I mean, whatever.
Hey, Triber in the playoffs, baby.
I know, I did see that. So I was surprised when I read, you know, again, I forgot it was a 60-game season, but somehow I was scrolling through ESPN and saw that, you know, the baseball playoffs were coming up. It was only days away, and that the Indians were going to
make it. Jose Ramirez, Mike, you ready for this stat? In the last 11 games, he has 8 home runs.
Nice job, Jose.
MVP candidate, Jose Ramirez.
Last time they were in the playoffs, he was terrible, right?
Yes.
Yeah, that's what I thought. So, again, he can... Have to prove he can it have, to me.
He'll point. Get the Giannis Award for the playoffs.
Maybe. So I still think – here's my question for you with the restart of when they're going to start the season. Do you think it becomes – is that something that immediately when this season ends and they're setting – I know they already set officially the time for the draft.
November 18th is the draft.
Right. And so then you're going to have – and I don't know if they've officially declared when free agency is going to be yet.
I believe it was after Thanksgiving.
Okay, so let's say they have let's say they have those things set. It doesn't really matter what those dates are, but let's just say they have those things set. Are they going to, when this season ends, are they going to immediately set in stone when they're going to start the next season? Or do you think that's something that they're going to make more of a, I don't know if last minute is the right way to say it, but is that going to be something that's going to be more in flux where, let's say the virus is out of control at that point, then maybe they do push back to Martin Luther King Day. Let's say the virus doesn't have this big second surge that maybe people are anticipating during the winter and things are relatively under control around the country. Do you think that then they might reconsider and say, hey, we don't want to punt on these Christmas Day games. It's been such an integral part of sort of bringing attention to the league that maybe they wait until whatever, the start of training camp or when they're going to get things kicked off. Do you think it's a fluid situation or do you think they're going to set it relatively quickly right after this season ends? I'm not sure what they're going to do.
Here's what I'm going to say. I think that they're going to start on Martin Luther King Day.
Do you think it's going to be in flux or do you think they're going to set that in stone?
I think they're going to set it in stone relatively soon after. I don't think it's going to be set in stone right when the season ends. I think they're going to announce that after the draft. They're going to do the draft, they're going to do free agency, and they're going to announce what happens. Or what they're going to do is they're going to wait 2 weeks, maybe announce after Halloween, like right before the draft, what the dates are going to be so that teams can prepare. But, I think that's what's going to happen. I think it's going to be Martin Luther King Day. That's where I'm sticking that there. I thought about it today, and I was like, well, he said this. That gets us into the first of the year. They're not going to be doing training camps between Christmas and New Year's, right? Would you agree, right?
Mike? I wouldn't think so.
So then you get into the, then you're on the second. Then you're on the second. At best case scenario, the second, probably the third. Martin Luther King was 2 weeks from there. That you could do a 2 week training camp. Maybe they do some kind of mini camp in December before to kind of get them at least. Then you give them the holidays off. They've already been away from their families, some of these players. You give them the holidays off. You come back. You do a 2 week camp, and then you start on a Martin Luther King Day. That's where I'm going. That's where my head's at.
It makes sense, and I think that the NBA of any league, like if this was the NFL,
hell no, they'd be playing Christmas.
They would,
for sure.
They would for sure be playing on Christmas. But because the NFL is, or because the NBA is a little bit more forward thinking than the NFL, I think there's a good chance that this is something that they're going to have a discussion. The league and the Players Association are going to figure it out and do what's best for everybody. And clearly, I think in this case, probably both the interests of the players and the league, at least in some manner, are aligned. In that the league wants to get fans back in the stands. And so the longer you push back, you would think the more likely it is that you can put some people in the seats and get some revenue coming. And then from a player standpoint, and I guess it depends on which players you are. If you're the Cavs, you want the season to start as soon as possible because you've been sitting around for 9 months, 10 months by the time Martin Luther King Day rolls around. But if you're one of these teams that's still playing right now, you obviously want to push it back as far as you possibly can to be able to get some rest and be home with your family and those kinds of things. So it'll be interesting. I expect them to work together to figure out a solution that makes sense. We also have to factor in, too, that the Olympics is next summer, which we talked about this year. And who knows how that's going to impact what the league does, because clearly the league has an interest in making sure that some of their players are representing the United States and representing other home countries of the players in the Olympics. So I think the league wants to participate in the Olympics. So with the fact that that summer games in Tokyo was pushed back to 2021, how does that impact the ultimate decision that Adam Silver and the league make about when they get started?
Didn't they say though that those Olympic games they might be flexible on in some of the sports and not be all running at the same time? Do you know what I mean?
It could be true. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure that was something that was discussed. I don't know if it was discussed once they moved it forward. I know that was discussed in terms of maybe trying to run it last summer when they thought that maybe they could still squeeze some stuff in. But I don't know. But I do know that the league's going to want to have their players participating, clearly. So
yeah,
I think they'll take that into consideration. So there's a lot for the NBA to work out. And then I think the other thing becomes is not only are you impacting next season, but then you're also impacting the season after that. And so I think the NBA is going to look long and hard at what are the implications of what we do, and is it something that we can eventually recover from on a temporary basis and get the season back to what it's always been, or are we looking to make a permanent change in the calendar for when things happen? And I think that's a decision that they're going to have to wrestle with for sure.
Yep. And I couldn't even imagine how that scheduling is going to go over. Like, I don't know. I couldn't even imagine having to be in that position. It's kind of like I wouldn't want to be in the position of a principal or a superintendent right now. So
right. And you, I mean, all the things we're talking about really don't have anything to do with the fact that we're in a worldwide pandemic. And if people still aren't allowed in the stands, which I think there's still probably a pretty good chance that next spring you're not going to put 20,000 people into an arena, that's going to be trouble for it's trouble for all these leagues from a revenue standpoint. And we'll see. I mean, we'll see what happens.
So I was at the Browns game last Thursday. There was only 6,000 fans at the Browns game. I mean, and that's an open air stadium, 6,000 people. So what are you going to do in a regular stadium? What are you going to put 200 fans in the stands? Like, is that even worth it at that point? I don't know.
Well, we just don't know. I think as we get into the winter and people are inside more with the virus, and everything that you read is that the air, when you have poor ventilation or you have enclosed spaces, that's where it's more likely to be transmitted. It just doesn't seem like you're going to be able to put a whole lot of people into an NBA arena. But it remains to be seen. At any rate, the basketball in the Eastern and Western Conference have been great. The games have been super entertaining. Every night I look forward to sitting down and being able to watch just the great performances that we've seen from each of these teams at various points. And I can't wait to see how both series play themselves out. And then I think no matter which combination of teams we have, it should make for an interesting finals, no matter which combination of the four teams ends up in the finals.
Yep, I agree. I'm looking forward to it, and we'll see next, we'll be back next week. Maybe before then, if it's all wrapped up,
Yeah, if we wrap these conference finals up and we're heading into the finals prior to next Tuesday, which I don't think we will be, but who knows. If we do, then we'll definitely want to jump on with a finals preview before we get to whatever the final series ends up looking like. So we'll see how it goes. We'll play it by ear. And we appreciate you joining us tonight, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.